Shmuel Aleph, Perek of Zion, Pasuk Beis. So David has decided that since Shaul is chasing him and doesn't seem to be letting up, even though he promised he would, he's going to escape to the land of the Plishtim outside Shaul's area of control. So Vayakam David, as always, with a great tzaddik, there's no hesitation whatsoever. David immediately arose after he had made the decision. And Vayavar hu v'shesh me'ozish asher imo, he and the 600 men who were with him crossed over El Achish ben Ma'och Melech Gas to Achish, the son of Ma'och, the king of Gas. Now, wait a minute. David had sought refuge with the same Achish in Gas earlier when he was by himself, and he barely escaped with his life because the Plishti officer said, kill him, he's David HaMelech, even before Shaul was willing to recognize it. They recognized it. And he had to pretend to be a madman in order to get out, because we know that Achish had a great sensitivity about that because he had a wife who had gone mad. So how can you go back and put yourself right back in the jaws of the lion all over again? So some say earlier he was alone and now he's accompanied by 600 warriors and a reputation. So he's going to be negotiating from a position of strength rather than one of weakness. Second of all, David saw it, and this is talked about by the Chazal, that in the Gemara it explains that David finally understood the reason for madness when he used that to be able to escape. So what he sees is his earlier experience with Achish was a learning experience, was a learning opportunity. And so he had been sent there only to learn about why madness existed. This time he already knows that, so he doesn't need to go back again. Third of all, he figured that with 600 men with him, nobody's going to accuse him of being a spy. You'd have to be a pretty poor spy to come with 600 guys and think that you were going to stay hidden. This is one of the things that the Malbim says, that he's not Shebar Kimaragel. He's not coming like a spy, the way they suspected of him last time. So the other Plishti officers wouldn't suspect him, because now he's coming brazenly and openly. And so he figures that he'll be safe. Also, earlier he didn't ask permission to come to Gas. Now he's asking first. He sent messengers first, as we're going to see. So by sending messengers, it is more of a meeting of equals, rather than an individual guy trying to sneak around and arousing suspicion. Not only that, but he's bringing his wives and families with him, indicating that he is not coming to start fighting. He is coming merely to settle. So the early Americans in Texas in 1821, Stephen Austin, who came all the way from Vermont. When we came to settle in Texas, we came as settlers and we got permission. He asked the Mexican government permission, at that point Spain, to come and settle in Texas, which at that point was completely empty, full of 3,000 rancheros and not too many people. And Texas gave rishus. They said, yeah, come on in. If you're coming with your wives, your families, 900 people, come on down. It was only later that it turned into the Texas Republic and the Texas Revolution and the open warfare. But at the beginning, it seemed okay. And it seems that Achish is going to see this the same way. So he is going to come to Achish with his 600 men to Gas. Gimel vayesha David im Achish begas. And David, in fact, settled in. He stayed with Achish in Gas. Not just in a day's inn, but rather he actually stayed with the king, apparently in the palace. Huva anoshav ishu veso. He and his men, each man with his household. And that is a very popular and common thing in the Middle East, in medieval times, that if you have hostages, if you have family members there, that is a surety of your good behavior, that you're not going to do anything violent or start any trouble, because the first person that they're going to chop the heads off of, not you, but your wife and kids. David ushtei nashav achinoam ha-yisraelis, v'avigayil eshes naval ha-karmelis. David and his two wives, fascinating the way that she is called here. Achinoam from Yisrael, the Jezreelite, Jezreelites, and Abigail, the wife of Naval, the person from Carmel, or HaCarmelis, the woman from Carmel. So it's interesting that she's still known as the wife of Naval, despite the fact that now she's married to David, and you would think that there's no reason to bring up that old story again. But obviously it's significant. Significant enough that she was still known that way. Not as a pejorative, but maybe as rather a positive, that she traded up in her second marriage. So Achish sees David as sharing a common goal, and this is actually fascinating. If you look at the recent history of the Middle East, you see much of the same thing, that there are often strange alliances and strange bedfellows. Israel in 1973 is being attacked by Egypt and Syria at the same time. In 1977, Begin and Sadat are signing some kind of a peace agreement, a non-aggression treaty between the two of them. And then, within the last 10 years, both Egypt and Israel have the same problems with the terrorists in Gaza trying to make their way out through tunnels. The Egyptians don't want the same upheaval and violence that the Israelis didn't want. But even more than that, if you look at America's recent history in the Middle East, so in 1991, we have the Gulf War, where George H.W. Bush says we have to get rid of that horrible, evil dictator Saddam Hussein. Where did Saddam Hussein get the guns and missiles and weapons that he was pointing at us? Answer, from us. Back in the 1980s, when we were selling him tremendous quantities of weaponry and missiles and armaments, because we hated Iran and we wanted Iraq to be our ally, so we are arming Iraq to have their war between Iraq and Iran. So whose guns are being pointed at us? Our guns are being pointed at us. In 1979, America, to the tune of billions of dollars, is arming the Mujahideen over in Afghanistan to get the horrible Soviets out. As soon as that war is over, Charlie Wilson's war, as soon as that is done, we ignore them again and take back all the money. What do they do with all those missiles and guns? They form the Taliban and they start pointing them at us in the 1990s and early 2000s. The Middle East is a long, checkered history of strange alliances. When you are working without guidance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you are a secular nation, not the Jewish people, when you are Afghanistan, when you are Egypt, when you are Achish Melech Gaz, you make alliances based on the convenience of the moment and the priority of now. Al tivtachu b'nedivim. You're acting with what seems like perfect rationality, but later on it's going to come back and it's going to bite you and it's going to be the worst thing you could have possibly done. Achish is giving shelter to David, and he thinks he's doing a good thing by having David owe him in his good graces. And yet, Achish and the Philistines are going to be in huge trouble once David decides to pick up arms against them. Achish is making what probably could have been seen as a mistake, and maybe some of his advisors who wanted David out the previous time, maybe they felt that way. But for the moment, it seems expedient. So this is what we're going to do. Global politics are very confusing. Yesterday's enemy is tomorrow's ally, and after we bomb Japan twice with the only nuclear weapons used in world history, at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, a year later, we are rebuilding Japan to be a tremendous, ferocious world economy because we felt that that was the right thing to do. Alliances shift. Expediencies change. Bedfellows are strange. David is always acting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in mind. Nobody else is. And that, sometimes, will be to their detriment, as we will see.